know why you listen.
Go see some cool stuff. Stay hydrated. Enjoy the sun. Get your dip count up. And free Palestine.
No, you can trust. And unlike other stations, the people who work and volunteer here are a part of your community. Remember, though, they do this on a shoestring budget. The solution is the Community Radio Initiative. You can find out more details at mycri.ca. In just a few clicks, you can generate an email to send to the politicians who need to hear your message. mycri.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We are fueled by your support. You make CJSF.
Hey everyone, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for Analog Archives, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And today we have a very special episode. Let's get into it. So, a couple of months ago, I came across a record in the archives here at CJSF that very immediately caught my eye, filled with colorful drawings of everything from toilet paper, stalks of celery, a rubber duck, a hamster, even a little light bulb with a smiley face. I fully judged this record by its cover and decided to play it for Analog Archives. This record was Happy Go Lucky by 64 Funny Cars, a band from the late 80s / early 90s underground scene in Victoria, BC. Thankfully, our programming coordinator here at the station, Jesse Wensloff, so kindly pointed out to me that 64 Funny Cars had actually just come out with a reissue of the very same album, Happy Go Lucky, which originally came out in 1989. As someone who routinely finds awesome local bands from the 80s and 90s for this show, but also awesome local bands that have seemingly disappeared off the face of the earth, this felt especially promising, and I reached out to them for an interview. They responded, and I was able to get on a call with two of the band's founding members, Tim Chan and Colin McRae. We were able to talk about the band's origins, some of their serious and less serious inspirations, and how they got back together for this reissue. Throughout the interview, I'm going to be playing songs from Happy Go Lucky, so stay tuned for this very special episode of Analog Archives with 64 Funny Cars. Hope you enjoy.
I'm Tim Chan, guitar and vocals for 64 Funny Cars.
And I'm Colin McRae. I play bass because I'm the tall, awkward, and good-looking guy in 64 Funny Cars.
It's a good combo.
It's destiny. People ask me sometimes, like, what instrument do you play? I'm like, you clearly don't know music, because you would know by by looking at me. I have to play bass.
What do you think I play? Come on.
Now, you know, from looking at other reviews, I know that this is a question you've been asked before, but I think it is a really cool story. So if you could explain how the name 64 Funny Cars for a band name came to be in the first place.
So we had our first practice together, Tim and Eric Lowe, the drummer, and myself, like in August of 1987. And then about a month after that, Eric Cottrell, our second guitarist, joined us. And we never started with a name. We just started with a number of songs that Tim had written and a few stupid covers. But Victoria music scene is pretty small. And so within short order, our friends in the Wardells, who are another sort of power pop band in Victoria, were like, well, we're playing some shows at Harpo's, and if you guys are ready to go, you should start, you know, you should open for us. So we committed to that without having a name. And so we had to work through that. So there was like declaration time at a after practice one night where we had to come up with a name. And we were throwing around stupid ideas. Most of them came from the menu at this like all night coffee place that we were, you know, having our meeting at, like the Chung Kings and the Barons of Beef, and like they weren't really sticking. But 64 Funny Cars is this drag racing event that happens in Seattle every year. And growing up in Victoria, we didn't get Vancouver radio, but we got Seattle radio. And so on KISW, which is like the rock station that we would listen to in Victoria, they would have these hilarious ads for, you know, 64 Funny Cars, Funny Cars, Funny Cars. And just like all, like it was sort of the precursor to those like stupid monster truck ads and stuff. Yeah. And so someone just threw that out on the table. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, that sounds good. And we also had no time because the posters for the show were getting printed the next day. So we couldn't leave that restaurant until we actually had a name. And that's where 64 Funny Cars came from.
This first one is Rain Gray.
We thought, that's it. That has to be it. So we went with it.
That's awesome. The next question I had that I was curious about is, you know, looking into 64 Funny Cars, it seemed like, you know, there were performances that have kind of happened over the decades, and also just different bands that you've all been in. But what prompted this reissue in particular? How did that come about? How did 604 Records get involved? Everything like that?
Well, what happened was, So 604 Records is local label. They made a lot of their their cachet by releasing Carly Rae Jepsen. Call Me Maybe was the one that really did it for them, and they've since been going on with lots of different releases, and they've done really well. They've released a lot of local bands and international bands as well. I think one of the releases is by Tommy Lee of Motley Crue, for instance. So Jonathan Simkin, who's the president of the label, he's been involved with the music scene since the 90s. And one of the things he wanted to do, as well as releasing the latest stuff by current signings, they wanted to delve into the past, and he wanted to release stuff that he was really interested in from back in the day, from the 80s and 90s and 2000s. So he created an imprint in 604 Records called Decades, 604 Decades, and he did one release or a couple of releases last year by a band called Colin, help me here.
Movie Land,
yes, who he really liked back in the day. Like they played a lot of warehouse parties, I think the occasional club gig, but he saw them around, and they actually never released anything officially. So that was their first release on the 604 Decades imprint, and then they had a call, just a general call for other bands from back in the day, and I just sent a message saying, hey, 604 64 Funny Cars would love to be part of it, because none of our stuff was on streaming services as yet, and we thought it might be a good opportunity for having a label behind us to help us put out all our stuff on streaming services. And went through a bit of a back and forth process. They were really interested in us. Jonathan actually did not see us back in the day, but he said he enjoyed our music and just kind of went from there.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of your music, one thing I was really struck by is I think a lot of times when I find records from old sort of more underground bands, either from Vancouver or Victoria, there is this sort of more like punk kind of harsher sound with a lot of the ones I've listened to, at least. So when I've discovered 64 Funny Cars and Happy Go Lucky, I was like, oh, this is so like bouncy and positive. And at the back of the record, it said one of like your musical inspirations was Styx, but I'm wondering like what some of the other I'm wondering what other like bands and groups and artists and musicians sort of informed the sound of 64 Funny Cars.
Okay, moving on from Styx, which is a representation of our sarcastic tone that runs through pretty much everything that we do.
Well, the whole reference to Styx in the back of the record was something from back at that time. It's like I think it said, "And to Styx, who we've never met, but is certainly who we never met, but remain a big inspiration to us." It was totally sarcastic. I think it was something that somebody made at that time, and we were kind of referencing that.
Yeah. But it's funny, like the very first interview that I think we ever did, it was for Monday Magazine, which was like the local arts sort of weekly in Victoria. Tim declared, "We're not a pop band." It's like, okay, well, that was actually kind of not true, but I don't know what, maybe because like Tim wanted us to like, get plugged into like the punk scene a little bit more or something like that. But definitely like pop influences and stuff. So, I mean, Tim had always like written a lot of, kind of more jangly pop influence songs, about love and relationships and all sorts of stuff. But then there was also like an interest around sort of country sort of stuff. And so actually Eric Lowe, our drummer, just before 64 Funny Cars, he did this project called Eric and Elmer, which was around like a whole bunch of, just silly 12 bar country songs and things like that. So we always had that sort of influence as well. But there was like in that sort of late 80s period going into the 90s, like certainly like the more punk stuff, or even down to Seattle, which was like an equally big influence for us, was about sort of grunge starting to emerge, and kind of the heavier bands like Green River or Lovely Love Bone and things like that. But there's also like a huge pop scene, right? So like bands like the Posies and the Young Fresh Fellows and the Wardells were always around. And so there was still like, it didn't get the headlines that, you know, the punk scene like DOA or No Means No would get, you know, which they rightfully should get, or kind of that emerging kind of heavier scene. Like there was always a thread of like goofy, fun, crafted pop songs that were sort of emerging. So that was kind of the lane that we sort of, you know, went into.
Yeah. And the other thing we should mention here, since we're doing an interview on Campus Radio, is all of us were involved with Campus Radio at that time. So a lot of the stuff that we enjoyed and played, say, on our radio shows, you know, were big influences on us. There's stuff like, you know, Colin mentioned the Young Fresh Fellows and the Posies. There's also bands like the Huda Gurus from Australia, who are still around as well. But, you know, we love that band a lot. The Replacements, another Seattle band called the Fastbacks, were also, you know, big influences on us. So, yeah, we took, you know, we took a lot of that stuff and added our own spin to it. And I just found our album here. And yeah, we said Styx, whom we've never met, but remain a constant inspiration to us. That was, somebody said that back in the day, and it was just a reference to that. So it was a sarcastic thing. But I think we were used to just say that a lot to our to ourselves.
Coming up next by 64 Funny Cars is Flat World.
Oh my God, is that really the time? Truck isn't running fast like it usually does. We distract so easily. Dreaming about sleeping on your parents' bed. In a week you'll really get up. We've been lying here so long that it's almost getting dark again. Time is not on our side. It keeps running away. Maybe we should call some friends. They must be wondering just what the heck is going on. They can think what they think. As long as we stay here, everything is fine.
Something I was curious about was having this reissue being done and revisiting this album that you had made like 30 plus years ago. What is that experience like? I'd imagine that if you're going as far as reissuing it, like it is obviously a piece of art that you stand by, but like looking back at the music that you put out when you were like in your early 20s or even before then, is there like a sense of cringe or like discomfort that comes with that, or anything that you look back at and you're like, oh, this is something that like I made when I was this age and it shows?
You get asked each individual member of the band about that, but yeah, I mean, there's some aspect of you know, a little bit of cringiness because, you know, it's very of its time because, you know, I wrote most of the songs on the album, and you know, they totally relate to stuff that was happening to me back then. You know, mostly relationship oriented. You know, there's you know, relationships that didn't go well. There's new relationships, so that sort of thing. But overall, you know, I think the songs stand up really well. I'm really proud of what we created. You know, you look back I had already been writing songs since I was in high school. So, and at that time I was in my early 20s, and really, you know, I got, you know, it was great to have a chance to start writing songs, and I just got a lot better pretty quickly, I think. And again, I think the songs still stand up really well. And it's great to be able to share that again, you know, via streaming services and, you know, re-entry on campus charts as well.
Yeah. But it's also, you know, reflecting back on the time in which we recorded it, and also like the constraints by which we recorded it. So like that album, you know, Happy Go Lucky, like recorded in a weekend on a like old school 8-track, like 8-track reel to reel. On a mixing board and studio board that Conrad Udo, the producer, would have to like give a serious hip check to once in a while to like solve some of the electrical problems that were going on within it. Like all of a sudden there'd be like this massive buzz going on, and you know, we'd go underneath it for 20 minutes and come back up and stuff. So we didn't have the money. We were sleeping in our van. We were like bathing in Green Lake, you know, in Seattle. We were eating at Albertsons and our, you know, and drinking, you know, the worst possible, but affordable beer. So it's not like what recording is now, even at like at a home studio level, right? I mean, people are doing stuff that sounds like 10 times more fidelity, you know, using their iPhone than what we had available to us as well. So there's like a bit of a production sort of gap that, you know, I think we just have to sort of acknowledge as well. Although all of our recordings went to somebody in Montreal who's like the master of taking like old analog recordings and making them better for streaming services, not by changing anything, but just like kind of upping them a little bit. And that made a big difference. But yeah, as Tim mentions, like it's weird in that sense, because it's been, you know, such a long period of time, like coming up on close to 40 years, but we never not like those songs. Like we never not had fun playing those songs, which we, you know, relatively consistently, you know, sometimes with gaps of like, I don't know, 5-10 years, but like we never stopped playing those songs.
And what's it like now playing those songs? You know, you performed at Catalana recently. You're doing a reissue performance party coming up soon. Have you found that like the crowds and the response you've gotten are from people that, you know, are from back in the day, like, oh, we loved 64 Funny Cars? Or is it kind of a mix also of people who are discovering you for the first time and are just really into it as well?
Yeah, it's definitely a mix. When we played at Catalana, you know, we saw a lot of friends there from back in the day, even from not back in the day, new friends that we've met in, you know, in 16 years, but of the same age as us. But you know, we've released the album, and it's done really well on campus radio. So I think I think we have gotten a new audience. You know, we've gotten play all around the world as well on various internet radio stations, like in the States and in Europe as well. So yeah, it's just been great. I think it kind of speaks to sort of the world we're in right now, where you know, this kind of harkens back to a simpler time. As Colin said, you know, we recorded on 8-track reel to reel. You know, it's a real human kind of recording. All the imperfections are there and all that stuff, right? And that's, you know, a nice antidote to all the AI crap and it's even Spotify crap that's out there right now.
Yeah. And it's like, again, like our origin story, like from inspiration to how we all, you know, we came together as a band, the best experiences of our, you know, that period when we were together the first time was all around campus radio. Like that was the heartbeat of it. I mean, you know, maybe an apex moment was like in what, end of 1989, beginning of 1990. I can't remember exactly where we're like, you know, we're at the radio station and we get the college radio chart, which is the assembly of all the different college radio playlists across the country. And we're like number 6 wedged in between like Red Hot Chili Peppers and the Jesus and Mary Chain. Of course, No Means No was number one because they were always number one, as they should be. But for us to then, like in 2026, to see our name on campus radio charts like across the country is just like, it's totally mind-blowing. And it's kind of satisfying in that sense because, like, that's, you know, we wouldn't have ever been a band if there wasn't, you know, campus radio. Because, like, back then, there's no streaming, there's no nothing. Like, that's how people learned about us, was like listening to CJSF or listening to campus stations at McGill or, you know, University of Saskatchewan or whatever the case is. Like, that was the place where you found, you know, independent music, you know, especially Canadian bands.
Up next on the album, Give It. One thing I wanted to show you is, because I have the original record right here. It actually says property of CJIV, because that's what we were back in the day. And it shows here all the people that played it and the timesheets for it.
I remember the timesheets on records.
One thing I'm curious about is that in the back here, it's a full paragraph of thank yous. And I was wondering if you could speak on some of them. Just because I was curious, like, for example, someone by the name of Janice McKenzie is the very first name on the thank you list here. And I'm wondering why what the significance of Janice was in the making of this album for them to be the very first name.
Well, Janice is, you know, a good, very good friend of ours, you know, and has remained and stuff. But we initially met Janice through CITR. And so Janice was on air at CITR, but also wrote, I think our column was called Local Motion. Was that, am I getting that right, Tim?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so we did, I mean, if you think that the recording fidelity of Happy Go Lucky is, you know, questionable, you should hear our first cassette that we did, which was recorded literally onto like a Tascam like unit like this big. And so we did initial eight song cassette in like just as we started, and that went out to college radio stations, you know, across the country. And so Janice picked it up and she wrote about it, gave us some really good props and stuff like that. And then that turned into basically being sort of the equity that got us like our first gigs over in Vancouver as well. So
she wrote for Discorder magazine, which I don't think it's around anymore, or is it still around?
it's still kicking. Okay. Yeah,
because that was that was one of the few places where you can read about campus or alternative bands, punk bands at that time. So it was a really key publication, and she wrote about us, you know, quite often in Discorder, which is very kind of her.
and also underwear, like at the very bottom, it says, and especially to all the people who clapped politely, even when we sucked. Was there a point where you felt like you sucked? You know, like it seems like you kind of hit the ground running, but was there sort of like an adjustment period or a growth period that you went through before you felt like really confident in what you were doing?
I think that's really a reflection of our self-deprecation. I mean, we're very self-deprecating. I mean, we always, you know, we're hard on ourselves as well. It's the other part of it, you know. You know, sometimes we play, you know, terribly, and people like this, you know, that sort of thing. We think we played terribly, but of course, you know, when you're out there, you think, oh, I didn't hear anything bad, you know, so,
like well-crafted musicianship and 64 Funny Cars are not like, they don't sort of come together. Like our sound and our way of playing was always like a little bit loose, a little bit wild. We stopped playing with a set list after, I don't know, a few months of being together, and people would just start songs, or mostly Eric, our drummer, would just like call something out. So every show was a whole new ball game, basically. I mean, we generally know what songs we were playing at the time, but then sometimes you wouldn't know what would happen. So, and like definitely on the more, you know, frenetic side of things. And so, yeah, there would be times when it would suck because, like, you're just...
Well, sometimes we just make up a song on or let's spontaneously play a song we've never played before, like a cover, like Sweet Home Alabama or something like that, you know? And we just start playing it. Never played it before.
That's very community radio.
Or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, you know, one of the times, you know, we played, there was a club in Victoria called Harpo's, and it was like, you know, the club in town. They were very instrumental in you know, giving us gigs a lot, and having us open for like out of town bands that would come through. We even got to open for like the Buzzcocks at one point, and Posies that we mentioned earlier, Young Fresh Fellows we played with a lot of times. But anyways, one day we were sound checking at Harpo's, and we're being really kind of down on ourselves for whatever reason, and saying, you know, talking to the sound man, and you know, we said, you know, yeah, you're used to a lot more professional bands than we are. And he said, no, you guys are total pros. You're, one of the best people that we'd love to work with. So, you know, there you go. You know, a bit too hard on ourselves sometimes, but, you know, the sound man loved us.
Next track. Arc wielding son of a gun.
Son of a gun. Well, there was no doubt that the word got out, and soon all my friends came by with metal bits that didn't fit, some short, some fat, some wide. And there is no fee, I can work for free, or they'd all bitch and whine. Gotta get away, I better leave today before I lose my mind. But I started just for fun at the tender age of one, and now I'm on the run. I'm an arc-welding son of a gun. Tender age of one.
son of a gun. Soon I got wed and vows were said, and then we had a kid. It was a boy, we were overjoyed, so I welded up a crib. But it didn't last, he grew up fast, it's a curse that's in my genes. Now my son wants a soldering gun and his own arc welding machine. So I started just for fun at the tender age of one. And now I'm on the run, I'm an arc welding son of a gun.
Are there any songs off the album for both of you that like you consider standouts or favorites that you think back on very fondly?
Well, Colin?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. It's a tough one. I mean, there's songs I really enjoy playing and that are sort of connected to things like Boathouse, which is, again, like the most non-serious song ever. It's got a goofy intro that would, like, in live shows would go like goofy times 10, sometimes very long. it was often like a show ender just because it had like such energy and stuff like that. So that's always like a fun song to goof around with. So. Plus, it was the only song on the album that I had a vocal part in. So, which is just a speaking line, because that's the full extent of my vocal capabilities from a singing perspective.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Boathouse is as Colin said, yeah, it's a totally goofy song and always fun to play, though. And it's one of the, it's actually the song that maybe got us established across the country, because it came out first on a compilation album on a label called Og Records, which was the label that a band called Deja Voodoo ran, and they put out all these compilations at that time called It Came From Canada. I'm sure those records are still in your library if you look into various artists.
You should go find those, Danny. Like those are
like amazing. A snapshot of the time.
I'm so confident that we have them somewhere here.
Yeah, there were five volumes of them, and we were on, I think we were on volume four. No, sorry, we're on volume five. We were on the last one that they put out, and Boathouse was on that album, and that kind of like it came out at a really great time because it came out just before we released our album, and I think that helped, you know, get interest in Happy Go Lucky when it came out, like about three or four months after it came out on that compilation. And we've since talked to some people who like there's some people, a friend of ours from Kelowna who's become a friend of ours since, you know, way back in the day, like just fairly new friends of ours in the past 5 years or so. And, you know, they grew up in Kelowna and they said that those It Came From Canada compilations, you know, were the soundtrack from that time because they didn't have campus radio there. So that's how they found out about, you know, underground bands, and they remembered us from the compilation. So and just so happy to see us play here in Vancouver, you know, in 2026. So
let's take a listen to Boathouse.
Hey guys, where are we going tonight?
Let me tell you,
there's one special building that I like best of all. It's not my home or the school or the shopping mall. There are lots of lakes and rivers, lots upon the coast. But when it comes to things in summer, it's the thing I like the most.
All winter we're on the run, but now it's summer and we're having fun. The Boathouse.
So Boathouse is the one, is, I guess, a unique one in that it was featured on, it came from Canada and kind of introduced a lot of people to 6420 yeah. cars.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, yeah.
So, but a close second to that would be the barbecue party, which has absolutely nothing to do with barbecues whatsoever, which is like a pretty serious, like kind of forlorn love song. And we did like kind of a, not a quieter version, but like with the acoustic guitar and sort of like the really jangly version of it. So I don't know if you've seen Danny, but we did a series of like live recording videos with 604. They got released along with the album. So that was super fun to do a barbecue party like today, because, you know, while the recorded version from the album is super cool, it was nice to like do a more electrified kind of rock
live
of it.
Yeah. Live with
the,
style,
with the
yeah.
live sort of sound that it usually has. So.
Another album in the works? Is that something that is in the cards?
Yeah, well, so Happy Go Lucky's been reissued. That's been out for a month or so. But we will be doing a second reissue later this year to coincide with the Black Friday Record Store Day. So we'll be reissuing our Hog Wild EP, which came out a year after Happy Go Lucky, came out in 1990. So that'll be it was a 4-song EP originally on 7-inch, but it's going to come out on 12-inch this time with some bonus tracks of outtakes from the same recording sessions. And again, we recorded it in Seattle at Egg Studios as well. And a little different sounding from Happy Go Lucky, but a little bit more mature, maybe. I don't know, or less so, depending on the songs you listen to. So that's coming out later this year, and it'll be also on streaming services, of course. But okay. We're doing the whole vinyl thing this time around.
Awesome.
And just to add that Happy Go Lucky is on cassette. That's the hard copy release is on cassette with the reissue. For those who use cassettes.
I mean, right behind me are just boxes and boxes of cassettes. They're still going strong here.
That's cool.
Cassettes are tricky, though, because we are in the middle of a very mass digitization project because they are also deteriorating.
Right.
But I'm 27, and before doing my radio show, I had never had any experience with cassette tapes, but they are a lot of fun. So it's cool to know that you're doing a reissue of that as well.
I mean, there's a lot of indie bands putting out cassettes, right? So
exactly.
Yeah.
One of the last questions I had for you both is I feel like throughout this interview, Seattle has come up a lot. And, you know, you had mentioned that in Victoria, a lot of the big radio stations that you would hear weren't from Vancouver specifically, but from Seattle. But outside of that, what was, I guess, the connection or draw or reason that Seattle is I guess, so important to the band in general?
Part of it, I mean, Victoria is literally, you know, on an island. And so kind of equidistant between both, you know, Seattle and Vancouver. Very often back in the day, too, you'd have to go down to Seattle for certain shows because they wouldn't come, you know, come across the border or whatever the case is. But probably there were just a lot of Seattle bands that just loved. Like, you know, particularly like Young Fresh Fellows, Fastbacks, Posies. What's that?
Green River.
Yeah, Green River. Yeah, so like we just probably more aligned to those bands from that perspective. And maybe it was because that late 80s scene in Vancouver definitely had more of a punk sort of feel around it and stuff. So we're looking for like, you know, high energy, high octane, somewhat goofy pop stuff like that much more happening in Seattle. And then, you know, the Young Fresh Fellows, Fastbacks, they recorded with Conrad Uno. They were part of the Pop Llama record label that Conrad operated as well. And so when it was time for us to record, other than doing it in Victoria, which didn't have a lot of options, we just were like, this is the sound that we want to get, right? So and Conrad would be the kind of guy that like would get to know us. So I'm sure that we sent him some stuff, or he'd heard about us from like the other bands that we had played with that were from Seattle, and we just kind of chose it as our destination. So that was probably part of what kind of centered us around Seattle being, you know, maybe a bigger influence or a bigger kind of connection point for us as a band.
And, you know, just geographically, as Colin mentioned, you know, we're right in between pretty much Vancouver and Seattle. And we actually could go directly to Seattle from Victoria. Like there's ferries, there are two different ferries that you could take to Seattle. So it was, you know, easy to get to. Bands could easily come to Victoria as well. As Colin said, we listened to the Seattle radio stations. There's a bunch of great radio stations in Seattle. The reception was way better than any Vancouver stations. So there you go. And we got a lot of Seattle. We got a lot of Seattle TV. That's another big influence as well. Tacoma was another. There was a Tacoma station that we watched a lot. Had a lot of the old cartoons and TV shows and stuff.
Absolutely. If you don't know who JP Patches is, if you grew up in Victoria, you know, in the 70s, you knew who JP Patches was.
Coming up next, coming up last, is Something Real by 64 Funny Cars.
What's wrong? You're so distant that I have to yell to get through. I can't talk to you closely the way that we usually do. I know we've been avoiding it, but it had to.
to come up sometime soon. Why can't they see that we're in love? And it makes no difference what I am, how I am, who I am. It doesn't go to the heads, so what matters is how we feel. But I don't care what they say, because we got something real. I know it's hard to change your ways of thought in an instant, but I am really surprised that it's such a shock to their system. You'd think they learned from experience that it's not such a big thing anymore. Why can't they see that we're in love? And it makes no difference what I am.
I think, yeah, those were the main things that I wanted to ask. If there's anything else, though, that you both want to mention before the end of this interview, what would that be? You know, whether it's about upcoming shows, what is next for 64 Funny Cars, just like a little plug at the end.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, we're holding our album release party this Saturday. Album release party this Saturday, July 25th at the Fox Cabaret. We're co-headlining with another local power pop band called Star Collector. And also we have a band, younger band called Muncho, who are like a really cool indie power pop band starting things off. And it's an early show, so things start at about 7:15, and then Star Collector's on at 8, and then we're on at 9. And then the whole night is done by 10, so it's perfect.
Especially for us that like to go to bed by 11 o'clock.
Most importantly. Very respectable, you know. Who has time for these 2 a.m. shows these days?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't know who these people are. Mm-hmm. Don't know who these people are. Yeah, and the last thing I is like working with 604, I mean, it's different for us in the sense that we never had a record deal like back in the day. In part because, you know, committing to being like a full-time band and like doing all that stuff was never really our aspiration around it. And that would be the requirement. Like
financially and time-wise and life-wise, like you had to kind of, you had to go all in, right? And that was never really in the consideration mix for us. So we don't really have any experience in that space. And so, but working with 604, like, you know, Jonathan Simpkin and Joseph Wilson, who's like our kind of key contact. I mean, they've been super fun to work with, super respectful, like investing like totally way more than they should from a time and, you know, financial perspective into it. But they're doing it just because they want to do it, right? You know, then and putting something back into the local market and having like a different kind of story that they can tell about what they're doing, you know, at that label, because they do all sorts of different cool stuff. So, yeah, like, you know, if there's a, like a skepticism about record labels and what the whole experience is going to be like we couldn't have had like a more opposite experience. So they've been super cool to work with.
Absolutely. They've been great with us and great to us. And yeah, we can't thank them enough.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Colin and Tim, for taking the time out of your day to speak with me about this, and wishing all the best for 64 Funny Cars.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Thanks, Danny. And yeah, really appreciate your interest in us. And this has been fun.
Awesome. All right.
And make sure you go look for those It Came From Canada compilations.
Yes.
We'll do.
Absolutely.
You do an archive show that is like, that's like 2 months worth of shows
That is good to know.
You just got to drop the needle on that and just take a break. Got it all.
Thank you so much to Tim Chan and Colin McRae and all of 64 Funny Cars for that interview. As you heard at the end there, you can catch them at the Fox Cabaret on July 25th for their album release party for Happy Go Lucky. Thank you for tuning in this week to Analog Archives. In just about a couple of minutes, we have Wham Bam East Fan with Linda, so make sure you tune in for that. Again, thank you so much to 64 Funny Cars for taking the time to speak with me about their band, their music, their album, their interests, their influences, their lives. We talked about a lot in that interview, and I hope you enjoyed it. 64 Funny Cars and Happy Go Lucky is now out on all streaming services, including Bandcamp, so go check it out if you liked what you heard. Anyways, it's been a blast, and until next week, peace.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The support from our awesome community helps keeping the station diverse and independent. Thank you.
Who doesn't love music? Join the weekly discussion at the CJSF Record Club with other music aficionados, checking out new releases and forgotten classics, exploring and learning about genres and loving music. Every Thursday at CJSF Burnaby from 4 p.m. till 5 p.m. Listen, learn, and share.